It's that time of the year where all the spirits come out to play. A terror grips the streets, and your darkest fears come to life. Pull in close as we journey through the darkness into the realms of the Monster Cast.
And hello, everyone out there, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast right here on NPR Illinois, the podcast for people who actually like movies and the latest horror film spotlight in our Monster Cast series for 2019. I'm Jeremy Gechner, the editor-in-chief of the Front Row Network, and with me, as always, here on Monster Cast, breaking down all things creepy crawly, it is my wife, Sarah Baltusevich Gechner.
Yo ho, yo ho.
That's the weird. No, what? We're not even talking pirates.
So what?
Oh gosh, what do you think this is? The Tale of Cutter's Treasure or something?
Don't crisscross podcast.
Yeah, we can't do that.
I can't because I only have that in my head because you sing that stupid Pirate Bay. Paw Patrol.
You're gonna bring Paw Patrol into this now?
Yeah.
Okay, folks. Well, go and check out the Pirate Bay
Paw Patrol. It's yeah. Pirate Day and Adventure Bay.
Yeah, exactly. The live show of Paw Patrol, if you're wondering what the hell this is.
And half our audience just turned.
Yep. All right. Well, hey, you know, you come to listen to a podcast on the great horror film Oculus and you get a Paw Patrol review. Why not, man? As I already gave away right there, we are doing our Ghost Spotlight for MonsterCast 2019, and we are going to do Mike Flanagan's 2013 awesome fest called Oculus. So again, we're going to be doing some heavy spoilers here. We go into pretty much all aspects of this film. It's 6 years old, so I mean, you really should have seen it by now.
Like, if you're listening to this, you've probably seen it.
Yeah, but there are to be sure a lot of spoilery things in any kind of review of this movie. So if you want to, full disclosure rules are in place here. So, well, let's kick right into it here. So 2013, this film comes out. Not a lot of fanfare around it, but it is a cult hit because it is an insanely well-reviewed movie. And I can really see why. It centers around two siblings, Kaylee and Tim Russell. Tim has recently been released from a psychiatric hospital. And Kaylee is a prominent, art dealer of sorts. She works for like an auction house.
Yeah, she's like a finder for an auction house. She like tracks down items and brings them into the house to be the auction place to be auctioned off.
Yeah.
But her fiance owns the auction house, so that's...
Oh, he owns it. I never knew that. Yeah. Played by Pete Lafferty, I believe, or what's his name? James Lafferty from One Tree Hill fame.
Yeah, it's his family's Dumont auction house.
Oh, well, look at that. Dumont. I never knew that. That does explain their very nice bedroom set later.
And car, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, but, yeah, so, why am I blanking on his name
Kaylee
already again?
Tim. Oh, Jesus. We just watched this like 2 days ago.
I know. So, yes, Tim's released from a psychiatric hospital, and Kaylee picks him up, and we figure out later in the film, though, that they have a pretty troubled past.
The whole film is told in two different timelines, and it doesn't just do one and then the other. It jumps back and forth the entire movie.
Which, by the way, now knowing the rest of Mike Flanagan's work is very on par for him.
Well, it's the same thing as Hill House.
Yeah, exactly. He does this quite a bit. Gerald's Game, as well, yeah. Does this a lot.
It's a lot of flashing back and forth between two stories.
But done to give context and to give more deeper meaning.
yeah, so it explains what happened in their past and why they are who they are.
Yeah, think like if Lost was truncated into, you know, an hour and 40 minutes.
I don't think that's possible, but...
Yeah, okay. Exactly. But anyway, so we learn, though, that Kaylee has arranged for this mirror called the Lasser Glass to be auctioned off at the house, at her auction house there. And we find out later, through an amazing voiceover that we'll talk about in a second, that the Lasser Glass is, to put it bluntly, an evil freaking glass. And it's probably, Kaylee believes, responsible for the death of her two parents that Tim was actually blamed for and sent away for.
You're telling this in a really weird order, but yes.
I know, right? Like, well, I'm trying to give like a giant overview, but it's hard.
The reason that Tim was in the mental institution is that he shot his father.
Yes.
And killed his father, and her... and his father, they believe, was responsible for the death of their mother.
Right. Well, that's the official story.
Yeah, they think she was mentally ill, but he kept her chained up in a room and let her die, basically.
Tortured her and, yeah, everything. So,
so
but Kaylee believes that there was some kind of spiritual entity in this mirror.
She believes that the supernatural power behind the mirror is what led to the parents' demise and not just the fact that her dad was having an affair and decided to kill her mom.
Yeah, and so basically the film, through flashbacks and through Kaylee and Tim being in the house with the glass, basically just the investigation of how to prove that this is correct. And there's a lot of different things to get into there. But that is a very, very basic overview of the film here. So, Sarah, when you first saw Oculus, like, what stuck out to you the most about this film?
Like, what do you mean as far as, like, what scene or, like...
Oh, no, just, like, overall, overall feel of the movie. Like, you know, what was it that, like, got you and hooked you? Because we both think this is one of the better horror films of the past decade. So, I mean, like, what was it that got you there even the first time you saw it?
I mean, we just talked about it, but I really like the format. It's something different.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, it's kind of like the book It, the way it goes back and forth.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, and that's, like, so in vogue now with a lot of films, but it wasn't really being done a lot back then.
No, so it's really, that's a cool aspect of it. I'm, you know, everything I talk about on Are You Afraid the podcast is backstory. So there's a really cool scene where she gives the backstory of the mirror.
Yeah, which we're going to get to.
It's pretty early in the film, and that really gets your attention. And then there's just some really good, like, legit scares. I mean, there's a scene with an apple and a light bulb that is, like, disgusting. And there's just, I don't know, just, like, the way that they do the ghosts and the story in general, like, how it pans out. Like, and, like, you even question it. Like, because Tim, in all the time that he's been in the mental institution, like, he has, like, his doctors have basically made him firmly believe, like, this was all, like, his dad was having an affair, his dad killed his mom, and he killed his dad. There was nothing supernatural. When they were kids, they both knew. You know, they made a pact. Like, we're going to get this mirror. We know it's supernatural. Yeah. But, like, he... So, like
Tim's been bombarded with all these different theories.
Like, basically, and, the only way he was able to be released was that he, you know, had to say and believe that, you know, no, this was not a ghost, this was not supernatural, this is what happened, I know it, I believe it, and right. So I can be re-immersed.
Well, but
society.
I mean, he really does believe it, though.
Yeah, he does.
He's very convinced that all the signs that Kaylee sees or espouses later in the movie
can
he's
be
just like, these
attributed
are
attributed to something
like,
else.
Like, I don't think you're remembering that, right? Blah, blah,
so
blah.
So I think, like, what I was getting at with that is, like, I love, like, the time it takes, like, just watching, like, all of his theories just, like, go to dust.
Yeah.
And, like, the way that, like, it does, like, prove itself in the end.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, that, in that vein, like, what stuck out so much to me is, like, you know, like, we've seen a lot of horror movies, you and I, and it is so hard to create an original, like, legend or story or
idea,
ghost or idea like that, a supernatural force that is this compelling in a film. I mean, because, like, you're right, you talk about that voiceover and everything, it's just like, you are so enamored with the idea of what this thing could be, and the fact that it's just there, and, like, that it's something that you just create out of nowhere. It's so rare in this day and age to have something like that, especially in the horror genre.
Yeah, I mean, he does the same thing in the Netflix series Haunting of Hill House, which came out, like, a year ago.
Yeah.
I just rewatched it last week, and it's just so, it's so compelling.
Yeah.
I mean, everything about it, and just, like, the lore that it creates, the creatures that they create, just, like, it's... And that's how this movie is. This movie was really, like, the first foray into his directing style like this. And it's just, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a new way to look at horror. It's not gory. It's not...
No, it's,
you know,
it isn't as much as it has to be.
I mean, but yeah, it's not filled with buckets of blood. You know what I mean? Though, I mean, there's moments where there's bloody things where they need to show them.
Sure, we're not in an Eli Roth film here.
No, it's not, you know, it's just... It's not, like, a ton of jump scares. It's not, like, needless. Like, it's not... It doesn't have to try too hard to be scary. It just is.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's many different scenes and ways that accomplishes itself, but it's also just extolling the talents here of these young actors that are now very well known. Obviously, Karen Gillan as Kaylee, who has gone on to tremendous fame with the Marvel franchise, Guardians of the Galaxy. But also Brendan Thwaites here, who is very, I think this is probably one of his, like, first big time roles. But he's obviously blown up into a lot.
The Giver and Maleficent were the year after.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, he's done a ton of stuff. The Pirates of the Caribbean, he's in now. He's just this all over the franchises, but like these two are kind of starting out on their journey. I mean, Karen Gillan had been on Doctor Who, and she'd gained some fame from that. But I mean, this one is, it really gets to let them showcase their acting ability. And that also kind of plays into another thing about the supernatural aspect of this film, is that the rules that this entity, we're going to call it an entity because we don't really know if it's a ghost or a demon or anything. He keeps us wonderfully in the dark about that. But the powers that this thing exudes are just so jarring. And so, because, like, you know, look, I mean, again, people, if you've probably seen the movie, but like when we learn that the Lasser Glass is real and that there is some kind of force behind it, the powers that it extols are very, very unique, I feel, in a horror film. You know, I haven't quite seen this kind of, like, mind-warping power of a ghost before. I mean, I don't know.
Like watching a Hill House.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
That happens to their mom. Like, you know, they're doing things, but they don't really realize they're doing it.
Yeah.
And they're doing things for reasons that they think are good, but they're not. Yeah. You know, like, example, like, the dad gets a cut on his finger, and he puts a Band-Aid over it, and he goes to take the Band-Aid off, and he does, but when he looks down, he thinks it's still on there. So it causes him to use a staple remover to take the Band-Aid off, which but the Band-Aid's gone. So he's removing his fingernail.
His fingernail, which... Sarah and I have a well-known documented history of hating anything fingernail or teeth-related in horror films.
We don't pull teeth. We don't rip off fingernails.
We don't like them. Get them away.
But yeah, that's just a tiny... Like, that sort of thing happens.
But that keeps going
all over,
because you're right. Like, you know, and we haven't really talked about it yet, but yeah, like, there's so many mind-altering things that it's just like you literally don't know until the very, very end of this film what is real and what is not that you've been seeing.
And like Kaylee, you know, they go back to the house as adults, she has literally, she thinks, thought of everything possible to, like,
yeah,
you know, subside, like, waylay this thing.
Yeah, so let's get into that, because, like, Kaylee is obviously, you know, Tim has been locked up for, I guess, what, 10 to 12 years, something like that?
Yes, I think it's like... 10, maybe 10 years.
Yeah,
Tim has just had to, like, you know, quote unquote help, like, getting over this. Kaylee has just had to live in foster homes on the outside by herself.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, she has had time to
think about this
a little bit.
That's what I'm saying.
You're right. Like, so talk a little bit about what her precautions are, like, Tim back into this house.
Besides, like, you know, meeting and dating somebody and, like, growing up, she literally has spent her entire life trying to figure out how to beat this thing.
Yeah.
And tracking it down. Mm-hmm. So besides just tracking it down, doing all that work, like all the backstory work on it that she's done, she also has to find a way to, like I said, waylay this thing.
Yeah.
She has to find and put it together all these precautions. So she uses, like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, she gives a 10-minute explanation.
She thinks of a lot of stuff here. I mean, like, she's got a ton of video cameras, all of them on, like, independent batteries, independent power sources.
None of them are connected to the power in the house. All of them are on independent batteries.
Because
that
she explains,
every,
like,
so
you know,
hours.
Like, electricity goes wonky around this thing. Plant life dies around this thing. Animals die around this thing.
So she has, like, all these cameras in different, you know, some on tripods, them mounted to the wall. I mean, basically everywhere you could look. She has like 7 or 8 different computers set up in the room.
Yeah, she's loaded up on water, on apples, on light bulbs, on everything, just because she knows how this thing operates.
And then she has like the kill switch, which is like an anchor, which is like mounted to a spring on the ceiling, and it's hooked up to a kitchen timer, no electricity.
Yeah, it's on a giant pendulum.
Every 30 minutes, she's
put a bunch of weights on it too.
It will swing down and go into the center of the mirror if she doesn't stop the timer.
Yeah, so the idea there is that if, like, the mirror starts messing with them
and things go very wrong for them,
that if nobody is there to reset that switch, then the mirror is toast.
So she has thought of a lot of stuff. There's plants, like, all over the house, in the room with the mirror, also, like, at different radiuses throughout the house to show how far its power stretches.
Yeah, and that's another great thing there, too, though. She goes about this very scientifically. Because she even says her goal is to, document and quantify, like, the supernatural phenomena at work within the Lasser Glass. And that's another aspect of, like, horror films that you don't see very often. You know, you don't see the, like, because oftentimes when you see, like, a ghost hunter or somebody with that much equipment or something, it's played for a joke, or it's played for like a ha-ha laugh. You think of the ghost facers or something in Supernatural. But this one, no, she's just really thought about this. She is very set in her hypothesis. And by the way, She's very reasonable to be set in her hypothesis because, as it turns out, this mirror has quite a freaking history.
She's right. I mean, yeah, she has her fiancé is calling every hour on the hour to check on them and make sure that they're okay.
Which she's, you know, tells him that it's because she's nervous about being with her recently released brother, which is pretty funny, actually.
But I mean, she has really, I mean, you would think, thought of everything.
Yeah. And I mean, like, to get into the reason why she takes such precautions, because this thing has left quite a trail of blood over the centuries.
The last 300 years.
Yeah, and she does a ton of research on it. And again, there's just an amazing sequence there where she gives us the full history of that. And look, we talked for a while before we started recording here about if we were going to try to, you know, recap all of it, or if we were just going to, you know, spring the audio from the movie and let you listen to it. And we decided we're lazy, so we're going to let you listen to that.
Yeah, I mean, we can just recap it. Basically, what the whole like backstory that she gives is that everybody that's come in contact with a mirror has harmed themselves in some way, like caused their own death,
or just very, very strange deaths.
Yeah, you know? I mean, all of them involved like one woman drowned, like dehydrated in herself in a full tub.
Yeah,
you know, like one woman like removed all of her teeth and put them in the bedside table.
Uh-huh.
One woman thought she was tucking her children into bed and she locked them into a cistern.
Right,
like it's things like that. One bank teller chewed her way through a freaking electrical wire.
Well, like you do. So
it's things like that and all of these things surrounding this mirror.
Yeah, so we're going to let you listen to all of the audio of that right now, just because it is a very compelling thing, and then we're going to get into what we think of that and kind of some of the powers of what this entity is and what we think it is. So we will see you in about, I don't know, 4 to 5 minutes.
So, the purpose of today's experiment is to prove that the object behind me, the Lasser Glass, is home to an observable, predictable, supernatural force. There's no scientific equivalent for the word haunted, so we'll just say this object is responsible for at least 45 deaths in the 4 centuries of its recorded existence.
Can I just stop you for a second?
No. Don't ever turn off a camera. The origin of the Lasser Glass is unknown, so I can't provide a complete history, but the trail starts in London in 1754. Philip Lasser, the 17th Earl of Leicester, acquired the mirror and hung it over his fireplace. And another precaution. Hi, sweetie, how are you?
Well, I'm checking in, as requested. You all right?
Everything's fine. I know this is silly to ask, but could you try and call on the hour? It's about 7 past.
Sure.
I'll talk to you in 53 minutes, and I love you. I'm expecting regular calls from my fiancé, Michael Dumont. I told him I'm nervous to be spending time with my recently unincarcerated brother, with instructions to notify the authorities immediately if I do not answer the phone.
In the room.
Nothing personal. So in 1755, Philip Lasser was found at their grand fireplace, burned beyond recognition.
While his estate was dismantled and scattered throughout southern England, one of the family's stewards claimed to see Philip reflected in the mirror, an allegation apparently taken seriously enough to warrant a church investigation into the house. The glass, thereafter known as the Lasser Glass, is sold in public auction in 1758. The next known owner is an American railroad tycoon named Robert Clancy, 1864. Clancy apparently weighed over 300 pounds. In fact, while attending university in Connecticut, he was known as the South Windham Whale.
He hung the glass in his ballroom in Atlanta.
Later that year, Robert Clancy is photographed by a local newspaper and, he's dropped a few pounds. His obit was printed a few weeks later. Doesn't list a cause of death. Unfortunately, he and his estate and the glass are presumably destroyed in Sherman's March to the Ocean in 1865. And after that, the glass is lost until it resurfaces in turn-of-the-century New England. The next case of note is Mary O'Connor, 1904. She hung the mirror in her private bathroom. 2 weeks later, her niece Beatrice finds Mary dead in the bathtub. Now, the official coroner's report lists the cause of death as, get this, dehydration. The woman died of thirst while soaking in a full tub for 3 days. The next case of note is Alice Carden in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, 1943. Neighbors reported hearing screams and loud bangs from the house. The police found the children drowned in a locked cistern. Alice herself was in the nursery, and both of her legs are completely shattered. Her left arm is broken in 4 places, and 6 of her ribs are crushed. In her right hand is a large hammer she's been using to break her own bones. And they find her just as she's going to work on her skull. Her right arm, though, is completely unharmed. Because she needed it to wield a hammer.
Alice later says she believed she was tucking the children into their beds, so she sealed them in the cistern. She never recovers from her injuries. And oh, the family kept several dogs at the farm, including an Australian shepherd for the children. Tobin Kapp, 1955. Starved to death in his own bedroom. The mirror was hung over his dresser. He had a pet Dalmatian. 1965, California. The mirror hangs in the lobby of the Hill Trust Bank in San Diego. A 10-year teller, Marsha Wicker, locks her manager in a bank vault and then chews through a live power line. 1975, Marisol Chavez dies in her bedroom of hemorrhaging due to a miscarriage. In her nightstand, they find every single one of her teeth in a little plastic bag and a pair of bloody pliers. 2002.
You know, there's a huge difference between causation and correlation.
I know the difference. Thank you.
Okay, then in 2001, Mom and Dad bought that new couch. Same year, Grandpa had a heart attack, Robbie Schultz got hit by a car, and our cat ran away. How much of that do you blame on that couch?
Can I get back to this now?
Sure, but let's get to it, Kaylee. Let's talk about why we're really here.
2002. The Lasser glass adorns the home office of Alan Russell, software designer, husband to Marie, father to Timothy and Kaylee. Within 2 weeks of its arrival, Marie suffers an intense psychological breakdown and is tortured and murdered in the family home.
By whom? By her husband.
So say the police reports.
And her husband was shot to death by her own son. Right in front of her daughter.
I intend to prove that none of the people I've just described were responsible for their actions. Alan Russell was not a murderer. He was a victim. One of many, as it turns out, victims of the supernatural force that resides in that mirror.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that little trip with Karen Gillan down the Lasser Glass history hole. You know, this, you and I talked about how, like, this comes about, like, what, like 15, 20 minutes into the movie. And until that time, like, Flanagan is really keeping us in the dark, you know? Like, there's really one supernatural scare, which is when Kaylee sees, like, an extra dummy under a sheet
in the house,
and the heads are moving in the mirror. But until then, like, we just see her, you know, like, talking to it, like, you know, you must be hungry. You know, like, she's, like, you know, it's very weird. We have no context for any of this. And then all of a sudden he's just like, oh, you remember those 20 minutes where you were wondering stuff? Boom, here you go. And he sets everything up perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good backstory on the situation.
Yeah, exactly. But so what exactly do you think this thing is? Because, you know, we've obviously seen like all of the stuff that it's responsible for with deaths. We've seen like some of the powers. We've already talked about how it bends reality, it seems, so that you like end up harming yourself and, you know, becoming a part of its, I guess, ghostly center.
I mean, I guess.
What do you think we're dealing with here?
We call this a ghost story. I mean, and I mean, it sort of fits into that vein because there are ghosts in the film. But I don't know that. Like, I think that like it's some kind of power source where like all these deaths like give it more power.
Yeah.
All the victims that it claims give it more power.
So there's kind of like a supernatural blob of
sorts. Yeah, it's kind of like a supernatural, like, portal situation.
Okay.
And it just, like, you know, like, all of its abilities exhibit mind control.
So you're not thinking it's, like, a sort of specified, like, intelligent thinking entity, you know, like a ghost or a demon.
No, I don't think it's, like, one thing.
Right.
I don't think it's, like, one demon. It's not, like, one ghost, like... No.
Right.
It's like the hub for all these different, like, ghosts and supernatural entities, like, feed into this.
Well, I mean, like, you know, Flanagan naturally doesn't give us any answers to this. You know, he kind of leaves it up to us to understand what it is. But he does, you're right, though, give us ample, like, evidence that whatever this thing kills, or whoever this thing kills, you know, their spirit stays with it. And I'm going to guess that they're not very happy with it.
No. But. And it's like they show several times that, like, you can't break it. Like, you can't, like...
Yeah, I mean, like, she even tells, like, there's a scene where the kids are trying to with, like, golf clubs and stuff, and it doesn't even make a dent.
Well, then once they look at themselves, they realize they're just hitting the wall.
Right, like,
it can use its, like, mind control to stop you from doing
that. Yeah, like, to, like, redirect your aim, even, at what it's doing.
I mean, I know and I keep then, comparing like, it, but, like, it's like Hill House. Like, he tries to burn it down with gasoline, and it just flames out.
Yeah,
like,
and it there's just also... Can't be, but there's also the, you know, when they're older and Kaylee is in the room with him, like, this is something Tim says, like, why don't you just smash it and be done with it? And she goes, go ahead.
Smash
like,
it.
By all
and
means.
And he's, like, going to, and he picks up a chair to do it, and then he just, like, puts the chair
then
down.
Then he starts, like, reasoning in a different way, and all of a sudden
why'd
you put the chair down? It's like, it can defend itself, but it's not in the way that you think, you know? And, I mean, there's even a couple of times where I think, like, the mom, like when we get a flashback, like doesn't she like try to throw something at the mirror and then it like does that like wave of overwhelming her and everything?
Yeah, she throws like a book or something.
Yeah, and we haven't really mentioned the parents a lot in this, but they're played by
Katie Sackhoff
is the mom.
Cochran, I think.
Yeah, I think Rory Cochran.
Yeah.
Man, we just synced that up, didn't we?
Marie and Alan Russell, those are
the Yeah, but they're very good in this too. Katie Sackhoff gets to do a lot of really crazy stuff.
Well, I mean, it's like a complete degradation of both of them, like in different ways. Like him as like becoming like obsessed with the mirror and with what its powers, and her just like completely just becoming like a feral beast.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's safe to assume that the mirror completely takes over Marie.
Well, yeah, but it takes
and
over
turns
him
her
too,
into.
But
well,
it's
yeah,
a
but
way.
I mean, like, I think like it keeps her in like this. You're right, like this feral animalistic mindset, and he obviously is just very seduced
well, what,
by it.
Basically, it. Just like it takes your like worst. I don't know what to say, like fear or like pet peeve or like, you know, like it plays on her. She has say C-section scars that she thinks are like gross, and she in it like it makes her feel worse about it, makes it look disgusting and like scabby and gross. And it also plays on her fear that her husband would cheat on her, and it just drives her crazy.
Right. And again, like there's all this, the way that this mirror, this entity, whatever, like bends reality to make you hear things you didn't hear, you know, because like she's having an argument with her husband and she walks away
he calls her a grotesque cow
or something like that. And you know, like when she looks back at him, he's just like, I didn't say anything, you know, like, so I mean, I guess that could have been that, but I always took that as like, you know, that's the mirror.
Yeah,
you know, making
her
hear that.
Yeah. And it drives her to a point where, you know, she's just basically become like animalistic. She's eating plate, you know, her teeth have like been ground down.
Yeah. She's eating ceramic plates. I mean,
he has her chained like a neck chain to the bedroom wall.
Yeah.
And he just becomes this like aloof, like asshole of a person that doesn't want anything to do with his family anymore.
Yeah.
He's just like obsessed with like the
power.
Well,
yeah, like
the
he just keeps like sitting in his den looking at the mirror.
There's like a ghostly woman that like visits him,
which is pretty freaky.
Yeah, it's played by
his wife. Yeah.
Who's also in Hill House.
Yes, exactly.
And his other movie, Hush.
And Hush, yeah. Oh, my God.
And Gerald's Game.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she's
all over the place.
Yeah, she's one of the ghosts from the mirror. And the kids see him with her several times and dumbly bring it up to their mom.
Yeah, come on, kids. Come on.
But, yeah, it brings out the worst in both their parents and drives them to their utter worst.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a slow degradation, and it's terrible to see. But, I mean, like, you're right. Like, the dad just, Alan just becomes so obsessed with this mirror that, like, you know, his kids are like behind him saying that they need food.
There's no food in the fridge.
Yeah,
like mom's sick. Like,
yeah, like mom's sick. Like, we need to take her to the doctor. And he's just like sitting there, like, it's on my list. You know, like,
yeah.
Just completely
just
not even paying attention.
No, yeah, it's
when they
sad.
When they try to get help from the neighbors don't believe them. And, you know, like, it's just like they have nowhere to turn. So, I mean, they have to try and do it themselves. And so you're right. Like, this is all interspersed with grown up Kaylee and Tim, like, figuring out that the mirror is real, and it starts to mess with them in various ways. Like, you know, after they're having an argument, they go back into the room, and all of a sudden, like, all the cameras are moved around. Everything's like facing a different way. The plants are dead,
and they
everything.
Check the footage, and it shows them moving the cameras.
Yeah, while having the conversation they're having
outside
in the hallway,
they are actually doing it in the room, moving like it and you don't know which one really happened.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, well, they clearly don't remember it, but yeah, like, there's just so. The fact that, like, all of a sudden now this mirror is starting to mess with them again, you know, and you're right. You say, like, probably the grossest moment, or at least the most cringeworthy moment in the movie, is when Kaylee is, you know, trying to change the light bulbs and all of the lamps, and she thinks she's biting into her apple, but she actually bites into a light bulb. And, you know, the glass is just, she pulls a giant shard of glass out of her mouth.
Like gushing blood.
But then as Tim reemerges from the other room, we see that she actually did bite into the apple. Yeah. And, you know, so, I mean, again, it's like, what is, like, the exact, like, extent of this thing's power? And, you know, like, how
she
it
usually, like, uses, like, the camera is what usually helps her to distinguish what's real and what's not.
Right.
Because if you can see it through the camera, then it happens.
Yeah, so she uses, like, her phone camera a lot.
Yeah, because, like, later on in the movie, like, she told her fiancé to call every hour, and if she doesn't answer, he's supposed to come to the house.
Yeah.
And so she finds, like, on the floor, like, this ceramic plate, and there's, like, a moment, you know, there you're seeing ghosts and things throughout the movie, and she sees this ceramic plate on the floor, and she thinks she's stabbing, like, a ghost, but then she glances back, and she's like, it's him, it's her fiancé, but she's like, no, it's not real, because the plate wasn't there, it wasn't there, it can't be real, you know?
But it turns out it's not the plate, it's a shard of the
planter pot that she had broken earlier.
Yeah,
and when she puts her camera onto her husband's fiancé's body, it's there.
Yeah, but then, like, I'm pretty sure, like, 5 seconds later, he calls to, like, check in on her. So it's just like, what the hell is real and what the hell is not real here? So, I mean, like, it's very, very interesting. Again, like, this thing has so many different ways of messing with your mind, and it's almost an unfair fight in that way, you know? Like, she takes all these precautions and everything, but, like, and you're right, like, also, though, how Flanagan goes and takes the flash flashbacks, they're seen halfway through the film, they start being seen as actual things that grown-up Kaylee and Tim are actually reliving and seeing. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes when a flashback is done, it'll cut back to the grown-up version of these kids, like, in the same room or in the same position that their younger counterpart was, and they, like, kind of, like, snap out of it like they were, like, inhabiting the past a little bit there.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting decision there. You know, it's another way for that to, you know, gain some traction there, but you're right. Like, everything continues to keep ratcheting up and ratcheting up.
Yeah, the flashbacks are done, and I think it's just a small thing. Like, they're done really well, like, and they're, like, really seamless transitions from whatever's happening. Like, a flashback always has a reason for showing up.
Right.
Like, something that they're dealing with right then in the future is shown, you know, the reason for that is a flashback. Like, it's just really, like, it's just really well done.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's, like, so many ways that this thing, like, because, you know, naturally, and this is probably the smartness of whoever wrote the script here. I don't know if it was Flanagan or not, but it's the fact that, you know, we've got, like, we would naturally say, like, okay, this thing is starting to mess with them. They don't know what reality is. Just get the hell out of the house. You know, like, get out of there. Get away. You're grown-ass people now. Like, just go away and, like, come back another time. But as they do that, as they get to the outside, they look back in and they see themselves
still
standing in front of the mirror where the kill switch would impale them
right. If
they don't go in there. So it's just kind of like, wait, is that really us? And we're, like, imagining we're out here, or are we imagining that? And it's like, you can't, like, what if you're wrong? You can't just leave, you know? What mm-hmm. if, like, so it's like the logic of the script follows very closely and very good and very well.
Yeah.
And
I mean, everything has a reason. Like you said, you can't just be like, well, they should have just left. Well, yeah.
Yeah. But how do you know that you're actually leaving?
It's really you leaving. Like, it's a complete mind fuck.
Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely is. And that's really the genius of it, is, like, we keep talking about this. We haven't even talked about, like, the ghost scares or the, you know, any of the jump scares or anything like that. You know why? Because it's an amazingly well-told story. You know, like, we have this really crazy, mysterious thing that we never get explained about. We have this unbearable human tragedy of this family being torn to shreds because of this thing. And then the human tragedy of, you know, Kaylee trying to convince Tim after all these years that what they experienced actually did happen. And, oh, also, we've got to fight this, I don't know, demon ghost thing in this mirror to try and, you know, bring honor back to our name or something.
The whole thing is just extremely tragic. And, you know, you of course, like, you know, they wanted to get back at this thing that stole their family and their life, but same time after you see it, once you look at it, you're like, they should have just left it alone.
Yeah. I mean, like, and that's kind of what Tim wants to do from the beginning anyway, for a whole different reason, you know?
Yeah,
like,
but I mean, for both reasons, they should have just left it alone.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, we should get to the ending of this. Like, it crescendos up into a ton of different ways, but, you know, like, there's so many different flashbacks happening. Kaylee and Tim get separated in the house. They both are seeing very different things, but Kaylee eventually sees their mother in the mirror. And it's important to note how, you know, the flashbacks end, which is that, you know, as Kaylee and Tim are trying to escape their father, escape the effects of the mirror, he actually goes up and releases their mother from her collar, and kind of like sets her loose and sicks her on
the
children.
She comes after the kids and she attacks Kaylee and she chokes her, and then she kind of comes back into herself.
Yeah.
After she chokes her and like looks at her daughter and stops herself.
And because of this, her husband, Alan, like shoots her through the chest and twice, and then eventually in the head, finishing her off. But that moment is so good from Katie Sackhoff there, because you can tell that there's just like, it's that internal struggle of just like, you know,
tiny bit of humanity
taking, like,
out.
Yeah, because you can't like bear to see your child like killed at your own hands, even if you're not in control of yourself. Like, it's a wonderful acting job by her, and all the more tragic when she's finally back from the hold of the mirror, and then boom, Alan strikes with the gun. But because of this, you know, obviously they're still trying to get away and everything.
The kids run and try to break the mirror with the dad's golf clubs, and as they're doing it, like, all the ghosts from the mirror kind of like descend upon them.
Yeah, and then the dad tries to once again strangle Haley. Alan tries to once again strangle Kaylee, this is where Tim picks up the gun. And it's so interesting here. Like, I wanted to get your take on this moment, because the Alan like kneels down and he like, you know, points the gun at you know, in Tim's hand. He points the gun towards his heart, and he doesn't say a word, you know, he just like holds it there with him. Like, what do you think is, do you think this is again like him temporarily taking control of himself?
Yeah.
I mean, like, because if he does, like, why not just get your kids and get out of the house or something? Or do you think this is literally
I think that's all he has.
That's literally all, like, he can muster.
Do it. He's telling him, like, this is all of me that's going to come back. You've got to shoot me now before I do something else.
Yeah, and I think that that's why, because once Tim does, well, I mean, Alan kind of
he pulls the trigger
over over his hand and everything. But once he does that, Alan is blown back into the mirror, and his head hits it and it cracks the mirror.
This is the
only crack that the mirror gets. Mm-hmm. So again, it's interesting that, you know, like, that's the thing that's able to break it. In a sense, is,
well,
it's like
it lost.
Yeah. Yeah. You because know? It wanted the kids. It wanted
the dad fully, and the dad let Tim take his life so that he could get out of there, and it kind of saved two souls from the mirror. That's what I always kind of took it as.
So again, I just really call out the acting of Sackhoff and Cochran there, because they are very good in the, because those have to be subtle moments, you know, those have to be subtle little like facial changes, not like big speeches or anything like that. And they do it remarkably well.
Yeah,
but,
and then that, you know, Tim's taken away, he's arrested, and Kaylee's taken to foster homes, and they as they're being pulled apart, it's promise will come back. And this continues
to parallel with there. So, like, once we finally see all this stuff, there's a crescendo in the real world too, with grown-up Tim and Kaylee, where Kaylee sees their mom in the mirror, and she goes
towards
it.
She sees her as a little girl.
Yeah.
First, as a little girl, she walks into the room and sees her mom standing in the mirror, and she,
like, arms
like, mommy,
outstretched.
And she looks like beautiful in her nightgown, and she goes forward to hug her. And then,
but Tim is seeing something completely different in the same room. Like, he's finally kind of emerged from it, and he sees like that the glass is there, and he's like, okay, screw this.
I'm getting rid of this.
So he
turns the timer knob and he
triggers the kill switch. But as he does, all of a sudden the facade fades away, because Kaylee has been impaled through the skull with the anchor.
Yeah.
And that was what Tim was not being able to see. That was what the mirror was manipulating.
Right.
And it's a pretty slow, gruesome death for Kaylee.
Yeah, it doesn't kill her immediately.
I mean, like, she gets to, like, there's some gasps, like some bloody gasps.
Yeah, some gurgling.
It's not good. It's very, very tragic there. But the police do come.
Tim had called them earlier.
Yeah, and now they show up and they assume that, and because that's what it shows on the video. That's what it shows on the video
feed.
Tim
just releasing the thing into
Kaylee's
just
net. He couldn't see what he was doing. Yeah. And so, like, as we see young Tim get pulled away for killing his father, we get flashes, or we get those flashes mixed with Tim grown up getting pulled away for killing his sister, and the ultimate tragic ending shot of, you know, like, as a kid, he's getting taken away in the car, and he sees
his parents
in the house window, and they have, like, the silvery eyes of all the rest of the ghosts that the mirror conjures. And as grown-up Tim is being driven away, he sees not only his parents, but now also Kaylee with those eyes, meaning, yes, Kaylee has also been claimed by this mirror, and Tim is probably going away for the rest of his life. So, and that's how our movie ends. And it's, you know, Sarah knows this about me. I'm not a fan of the tragic endings.
Which I don't get, because he likes horror movies, but he always wants, like, a tidy ending. And I don't get it.
I don't always. Like case in point, I think this ending is appropriate because it's a supernatural entity. You probably can't beat that thing no matter what you do.
Sometimes you just can't beat human things.
I'm not a fan of humans inflicting pain on each other. And then it's just like, well, that's how it is, folks.
Yeah. It's like the humans don't get their comeuppance in the end of any horror movie that involves that.
Human people perpetrating terrible
things. I'm sorry,
things.
But that's not the way the world works.
But no, I know that, but it doesn't even, but it's not.
I can't have this argument again.
I get that it's inconsistent because I'm also a fan of the way The Strangers ends, which is very weird.
I cannot have this argument
again. I don't know what triggers it in me, but this one does not, because I think this is a perfect ending. I think this is an ending that is very well
done.
But
Tim isn't happy.
Oh, fine. I get it. Everyone else can lambaste me on it too.
I'm sorry, it drives me insane.
I'm just saying, like, talk about the ending. Jeez, man.
There isn't much to talk about. That's how it ends.
What did you think of the ending? Because it is, like, a genuinely shocking ending.
I think they should have left that shit alone. They should have sold that MF in house, and they shouldn't have tracked down the mirror. She could have married Nathan Scott, had some little basketball babies. He's a good looking dude. You know, he can go do some, some chicks.
He sells art and sculpture and crap. Yeah, man. He's Brendan Thwaites. He goes off on pirate adventures. He can get a girl.
They both could have had a fine life. She has a really nice ponytail, like
that really oddly sways when we first see it.
Swings really violently, but yeah, no, I just think it's so tragic.
So that's the other thing about the film that always comes through for me is the metaphor about not being able to let go of your past, you know, not being able to move on from tragic and traumatic circumstances, and how those circumstances can define a person so much that they end up destroying themselves in the process. I mean, is that kind of what you're talking about there?
I mean, yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I know it's a jerky, but I kind of blame her for all of it.
Well, no, I think that's fair.
Because,
I mean,
you know, yeah, he might have been brainwashed, but at least, like, he could, like, have some closure and, like, move on with his life. But she just, like, literally the second he gets out, it's like, okay, so I've
got
it.
We're going.
And he's like, wait, what? I mean, he just wants to, like, go eat a cheeseburger and, like, you know, go freaking, I don't know, smoke a cig.
It's a nice Tony Stark reference there.
Seriously, though, like, she just pulls him back into it. And, like, no matter how hard he tries to, like, fight it, and he's the one who ultimately, like, I know she's dead, but at least, like, her suffering's over.
It's interesting because, like, you can see the inherent flaw in Kaylee's way of thinking, because you're right. Like, it ultimately does lead to her demise and Tim's, you know, future, I assume, incarceration for the rest of his life. But, you know, at the same time, it's just like you see this thing, this force, this entity, like, rip your family apart like that. You want revenge, like, and it's the fact that, you know, there is something tangible that she can try to get revenge on, you know. But you're right. Like, that's also a parable about the nature of revenge itself anyway, you know?
I mean, like, I think if she took that much time to, like, track the thing down and get her hands on it, then why not just lock it in some, like, safe underground
somewhere? Yeah, why not
somewhere
keep it somewhere
just,
so
yeah.
it doesn't, because,
so
well,
it can't,
I mean,
feed off anyone. I mean, I don't.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing is because, like, you think, like,
poltergeist caves with
because
that
she
weird
even
guy.
Says, like, there's no, yeah, okay. Well, and it's because, like, she even says, like, there have been people who've tried to destroy this thing, but they can't. So, I mean, like, you're right. You should take your own advice there. You probably can't destroy
it. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's been, like, billionaires who have tried to, like, destroy, like, seriously, like, professors, like college professors who have tried to destroy it, like, leave it be.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta let it go, man. Yeah,
you gotta hold of it. First off, don't auction it off. I mean, Jesus, those poor people paid $25,000
to die. That's how she got it there, you know?
Well, I know, that's what I'm saying, but then they auctioned it off. Well, it was sold.
Yeah, she had to. I mean, she couldn't just be like, by the way, before you sell this.
I'm sorry, but that's evil. Like, you're condemning somebody else. She's like, yeah, we have 2 days to destroy it so these other people can take it home. Like,
well, I don't think she was ever planning on it not being destroyed in that time. Like, I'm pretty sure that was part built into her plan. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, you know what? Store the thing somewhere where it can't hurt anybody and be done with it.
Well, yeah, because I mean, like, what's the old saying? You know, he who seeks revenge should dig 2 graves, right? So, I mean, it's like, you know, the fact that, and again, like, this is part of my day job and everything, but it's just like, you know, you look at, you see traumatic events and how people react to them. It's different in this one because obviously it's a supernatural thing and there's so much you don't understand about it. Like, for all of Kaylee's research, she still doesn't know what the thing is. She still doesn't know exactly how its power works, you know? Like, so, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, isn't this better left alone? And I mean, Tim tries to get her there.
Also, like, isn't enough enough? Haven't you lost enough?
Yeah, well, I mean,
I get the revenge aspect, but it's like, come on.
Well, it's also a very old school way of thinking of just, you know, like, trying to clear her father's name, too. But, you know, again, at that point, like, what does that accomplish for you? I'm assuming you haven't been hindered by your family's name. You know, you're pretty successful in your life.
This thing's been around for 300 years, and nobody's been able to prove it's supernatural or clear anyone's name from it. So I don't think two young kids are going to do it.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of hubris that definitely goes into Kaylee's character. And Karen Gillan plays that very well.
Yeah, she's very cold.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Cold is the exact right word for it. She's very scientific, very aloof of, you know, the human cost that might come from trying to do this.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, for her, this is revenge. This is, you know, you killed my parents. I'm going to kill you. But first, I'm going to prove that you're real so that I can prove that my father wasn't some sadist that, you know, should be spit upon every time you think of his name, that he was a victim of this mirror too, and that's the way it is. So yeah, I don't know if I've got anything more to say about it. I mean, like, the movie is just so fantastic. It is such a good ghost story. I mean, like I said, if we're going to call it that, but it's just one of the better horror films I've seen.
Yeah, it's hard to
kind of,
like, really classify it into any. I mean, I guess Ghost is the closest.
I mean, Ghost kind of encompasses a bunch of different power sets, I guess, in lore. So, yeah, why not call it a ghost?
Supernatural thriller.
Yeah, there you go. but, yeah, I mean, like, again, I just cannot praise the director, Mike Flanagan, enough. Praise the actors that made this film go, including the young Kaylee and young Tim. They're very good as well, mm-hmm. In this, especially playing up the horror of a situation like that to two kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie, I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is a staple of our Halloween every single year.
It's a really good one. I really enjoy it. It's subtle, but it's, like I said, it's not like a jump scare, you know, let out a yelp scream kind of movie, but it's a thinker and it's just really well done.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So,
I've said it 50 times, but if you like this and you like Mike Flanagan and you haven't watched The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would like to talk about that eventually because I just love it.
I mean, like, I'll tell you, just watch Mike Flanagan because this guy is on a roll of horror film success that I have not seen in a long time. I mean, you had this. We talked about Gerald's Game. We talked about Hush, Ouija, Origins of Evil, Annabelle. What's the second? Yeah. Annabelle Creation. You're right, The Haunting of Hill House. Like, this guy is making a ton of great horror films right now, and like, I literally, all of those I've listed to you, I would recommend to friends, to anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all very scary and very well done in their own right, and it's all from this dude's brain. So just watch Mike Flanagan movies.
Yeah, and there's a new season of Hill House coming out next year,
right?
Which is, it's kind of like an American Horror Story thing where it's a different tale every season, but
yeah,
new one's called The Haunting of Hill House, Bly Manor,
and the cast is coming back.
Actually, I don't know
albeit
if it's Hill House.
Different...
I think it's just like The Haunting of Bly Manor,
yeah, something like that. But I mean, it's the cast from Hill House, but they're playing different parts now, just yeah. So you're right, like American Horror Story. And if you want a little bit of insight into that, you can go and find the Front Row Network's interview with Henry Thomas that we did at Heroes and Villains Fest 2019.
Although I did read that he just got a DUI this week.
Oh man, come on. Come on.
It's okay. It happens to the best of us.
Yeah. E.T. must have come back. Anyway. All right. That's going to do it for this horror film Monster Cast Spotlight for 2019. We've got one more left. Sarah, what are we bringing to them on Halloween night?
Oh, really? Halloween night? Oh, that would be The Cabin in the Woods.
That is right. I freaking love this movie so much.
Jeremy likes this movie a little bit too much. It's kind of freaky.
I don't think you can like this movie too much.
The first time we saw it, I hated it. Yeah. It's grown on me. I still think it's weird.
It's awesome is what you meant to say.
You just like it because of Bradley Whitford.
Well, Bradley Whitford, Richard Jenkins, Chris Hemsworth, and the fact that it was Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon. So, yeah, there's all kinds of geek awesomeness here. But I'm telling you right now, I love this movie. And I think
Jeremy apparently also has
right there,
babies.
Like, it's okay.
He's scratching like a crazy person.
Well, you know, maybe it's the Lasser Glass.
It must be. Jesus.
All right. That's going to do it. If you want to find more from the network, go to our websites, frmpod.com or nprillinois.org, or find us on social media, the Front Row Network on Instagram and Facebook, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of Monster Cast for the Front Row Network. I'm Jeremy Gechner.
I'm Sarah Baltusevich Gechner.
And we will see you in the front row. This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.